welcome to Are You Connected, episode 4. I'm Jenny Ashby from Bendigo, but actually in Stratford, say, and...
I'm Lois Smethurst from Berwick, but actually I work in Berwick and I live in Gippsland in Victoria, in Australia. We're both from Australia.
And I thought it was near Portsea.
No, it's... Well, it's relative. Compared to Perth, it's quite close to Portsea, but compared to Melbourne, probably not.
It's been a big week in ICT, Lois.
Well,
Skype debating, blogging.
I think every week's a big week in ICT. You don't have many down weeks, do we?
We don't, do we?
No.
Even when you're on holidays.
No, not
we. We have a big week, don't we?
Well, we had a massive one, didn't we?
Yes. So what's been happening with your week, Lois?
Well, big day today. I don't think I slept last night. You know how you get excited about something? So we've had our first online Skype debating today. And it was a bit of pressure to get everything organised and get the teams ready, and because it's like presenting, isn't it? And so I felt that we just had a busy day. So we did that this morning. So that was pretty exciting.
Using Skype?
On Skype with the school on your side of the world, on the other side of Melbourne. And it worked very well. It was good. And we've got 9 teams all together, so we'll have 9 debates. And we've got 8 to go.
So just one today with 2 schools?
Yes. Yes. Well, with the debating, it's hard to do with more than one school because you can't have a conference with video, I don't think.
Oh, you didn't have video on?
No, we did have video on. So you could only do 2 schools. You couldn't do a third, for example.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't...
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
You can only have from 2. I think with that other program called iChat, you can have a fair few more people on video at once.
Yeah.
But you're just limited because it's only on a Mac.
Yes, that's right. And I don't think they're a Mac school, and we're not.
Probably your debates, though, it's better just for 2, isn't it?
Well, you only need 2, but it would be nice to have a third school watching, perhaps. So, you know...
Maybe Illuminate.
Well, you still don't see each other face-to-face. So I suppose you could, couldn't you? You
could
do the
speaker.
Video on. You could put the speaker on.
Yeah, and then everyone, you could have lots of schools listening to the debate, which would be wonderful for schools who haven't ever done a debate before.
But they could see the speaker too, couldn't they? Everyone could see the speaker. That's a good idea, you know.
Plus they could put something on the whiteboard if they wanted to.
I don't know that you'd want to do that because...
Just their argument?
No. Probably not, because it's a debate. I mean, the children are supposed to be prepared and they're presenting their debate. So you wouldn't want to distract from... what they're saying and the fact that they're presenting it, they're not reading it. I think the whiteboard would distract them.
Yeah,
and it's about watching their mannerisms and them using expressive language and hand gestures and things like that. So, but it would be great to be able to, you would be able to see one speaker and a number of schools would see that one speaker. So that's a really good idea. I might
try it.
Yeah, I'm going to try that. That's a very good idea.
Go into the knowledge bank and book a room.
Book a room. And so if I book a room, I can have as many participants as I want, can't I?
I think there is a limit, but it's a fairly good limit.
But I'm saying it's more than 3.
Yes, more than 3. More than 3.
I wouldn't want many more than 3. It's nerve-wracking enough as it is.
You could have 100, I think.
Oh, no, we couldn't do that.
So schools could watch on their big whiteboards and watch a debate in progress. It'd be wonderful.
I think... Because what we're trying to do is develop this into... this is a protocol, you know, that we're trying to develop, and we'd like to have more than 2 schools involved in the draw. So an Illuminate room where you could watch each other debate would be a great way to go. And then, say if you had 3, for example, the first debate could be between school A and school B, and then the second debate could be between school B and school C. So,
and is there always a different topic?
Yeah. Yes. We've with 9 classes, we've got 5 topics.
What was today's topic?
Today's topic was a very good question. What was it? I can't remember.
Should we wear school uniforms?
No.
Should we have school canteens with lollies in them?
I think it was about... I know what it was. We've been working on a lot of debates. Today's debate was students should choose their secondary school. And so,
don't they?
Well, it was a matter of whether parents should choose or students should choose. That was the debate. So one debated the affirmative and one debated the negative.
Ah, there was no in between.
No, and it doesn't matter whether you agree with the topic or not. It's about thinking.
And it's about supporting what side you're given to debate about, isn't it?
It's actually very strong thinking skills, because you have to be able to narrow it down. What is this argument that you're presenting? So you want to refine it to like a single couple of words, and then you have to separate all your arguments, whereas when children start debating, often their arguments run together. The points that they're making get all merged together. So they have to start to see that this is one argument, this is a second argument. And they have to be able to think on their feet when they're rebutting what the other person has said. So it's a great process for thinking.
And they basically learn that there is always more than one side to an argument.
Yes.
And that both sides of the arguments have for and against, don't they?
Well, they do. And it's about not being too personal about the debate. A debate doesn't matter what side you get. It's a matter of whether you can put up an argument to support your side. So it's been fantastic. The kids have been very engaged, and it's quite very nerve-wracking for them. They get up there and it's like being on stage, you know, and they get quite nervous. So
That was great. And this week, last week, I was using the iPods in our maths activity time for chance. We were doing chance last week, and I used a little app called I Choose, which allowed us to add a touch of the iPod, bring up a card or roll the dice, and then we've got two numbers to work with in our maths. So that was great, so I didn't have the horrible noise of lots of dice in the room
and
being thrown around or things.
These are your preps and grade ones again?
This is with my preps and grade ones, yes.
And so did they come up with any amazing discoveries or...?
Well, they discovered that you've got a greater chance of getting a number card than you do a picture card in a pack of cards.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
And then some of them realised, well, that's because there are more. So this sort of thing.
Yep.
And they discovered that it doesn't matter how hard you try to get a number on the dice, it's really just to do with chance. So it was interesting.
So then no matter how much you wanted the six to show up, it's just lucky if it does.
Yes.
Well, that's a big understanding for preps, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and then we talked about Tats Lotto and all those balls and all that sort of thing, and talked about what was luck and what... Well, and someone mentioned a rabbit's foot and all that sort of thing.
And is this app, could you use it with older students as well?
You could use it with older students, yes, for lots of other different sorts of chance and data activities where you can use the different cards, dice. You could choose a left or right, so it just... came up left or right, and of course there was a coin tosser that tossed the coin for you, heads or tails. So it's got a lot of uses right across your prep to grade six and higher.
Did you shake the iPod?
You can
touch?
Shake it to make the dice roll.
Yep.
Yes, or you can just tap it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you'll be putting a link on that on our blog so that people can find that app if they want to use it.
It's in the iTunes App Store.
Have you? Are you going to write about it on your blog?
I will be writing about it on my blog.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Good.
Adding it on there.
Yes.
So what else were you doing?
What else have I done this week? Oh, I've got to say my new favourite application is Sam Animation. Have I told you about Sam?
And how were you using it at your school?
We were using it to write about science concepts. The grade ones and twos are doing the life cycle of a plant. The grade threes and fours are making animation of how global warming works. And I must say, I'm very impressed with Sam Animation for a free application that you can download and use on your network.
So you don't actually create in the Sam Animation, you make all the pictures somewhere else and then put them in Sam Animation and it runs the animation?
We created them in TuxPaint because TuxPaint has the option of save a new copy, so, and it doesn't ask you to name the file. So you can very quickly build up a bank of pictures using TuxPaint, but you have to think what you can draw in terms of I can add a little bit and then save it. It's not actually, you can't put a stamp on then move the stamp across the screen. But the ones that we were doing were plants growing or the atmosphere getting thicker and the sun rays bouncing around. So that was perfect. And so very quickly, like in one session, the students had enough pictures in their Tux folder to make the animation. Then you import them into SAM Animation and created a sound file. We created it using Audio Touch, which is the one our students use by default. But you can, it has a lovely recording feature in SAM Animation as well. And there's two soundtracks, so you can even add music if you wanted to finish it off. And then it has umpteen different ways you can export it as a movie when you finish that, which means you can put it up on your blog very easily.
So, yeah, I think being able to export in lots of different file formats is so handy, because that's what you need these days.
You do.
Being able to get the file format that you want, and then you can do something else with it.
Well, I was impressed. The more I used it, because it was a bit of an experiment. I'd seen it earlier on in the year, and I thought, oh, this looks good. And I thought, well, we'll see how this goes. But the more we used it, the features on it are really nicely thought out, and the students love it, and they get a nice little movie. With their voice, they can adjust the soundtrack under their photos so that they can say, as you can see, and the picture would show that little bit. So they can pull the sound around, they can pull the pictures around, and it's quite easy to do. And lovely movies at the end. So,
oh, sounds great. Yes. Well, you inspired me, Lois, and I went off and looked up Tux Paint and discovered that the version I had was from 2003.
Yes, must have been a fairly old version.
Doesn't time get away from you?
Well, you know, even when I was looking at it, because I decided I'd better write about this on my blog, I thought I'll get the new links. I've discovered there was a new version since I've had it, so there's been a new version just in the last year.
Because I don't think it had slideshows, that part in the one I had.
Well, it's always had slideshows that I've seen, but yours, you've had obviously a lot longer than I have. But do you know too, if you do a search, you can find Australian stamps for Tux Paint.
Yes, and I saw that.
Yeah, so it has all the Australian money. It has all the flags for the Australian states and the symbols. So,
yeah, and I really am impressed with the stamps, because they're very much like, well, just the graphics are so much better than Kidpix stamps.
They are very good graphics. They're lovely.
Yeah. Kidpix are very pixely. I guess that's why it's called Kidpix.
Yeah. Well, I think that the two programs do two quite different things in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
One, Kidpix, for example, has a talking voice, whereas Tux doesn't. Kidpix, you can move you could pick up your stamps with your hand and move them across the screen, which you can't in Tux. You have to erase them and redraw them and things like that. But, you know, they're different horses for different courses.
You can still save and change and save and change.
With Tux, you don't even have to name it, though, which makes it quicker. Yeah. And it gives you that option. It's got two very clear options. Replace the old copy or save a new copy. So the children just always use save a new copy. And so that makes it quite quick. And there's no naming. It gives it a default name, so that's even quicker.
That's great sometimes, just to be able to do a job
and
not have to get a whole lot of other things that you've got to teach and get bogged down in, and then they've lost it.
Yeah, well, that's right. And so then they just have to... The hardest thing is navigating to the folder and turning your search to a PNG, not a JPEG file. But
in Tux Paint, you mean?
In Tux Paint's a PNGs, whereas SAM Animation looks for PNGs. JPEG, sorry.
Okay. So, in Tux Paint, can you set that?
No.
You can set where your files go in Tux Paint.
You can, but I think they're always PNGs.
Oh, okay, so that's the file format.
Yeah, I haven't actually looked, but I don't think you can change that, but you can change where they're saved to.
Right. Mm. Okay, well, that sounds like lots of good stuff, and I'll be certainly using Tux Paint this week because I like those stamps. They look really great. I've been doing a bit of working on e-portfolios with my grade prep and ones today.
Now, we did touch on that last time, didn't we?
Yeah, and today I had them adding all the things we've been collecting in maths, because we've been using cameras a lot in maths and taking photos of all the different activities they've been doing in volume, perimeter, area and fractions, all that sort of work, and I've put them out as a website with all the links, all the photos, and they can just drag and drop them into their e-portfolios that they did today. We had screenshots from our iPods, of course, with count by, with showing different counting patterns. We had screenshots from our iPods when we did area and perimeter, and photos from when we did volume, and different photos for when we did fractions, and lots of different work they put on. But the interesting thing was today, getting the kids to write about what were they learning about? What was that helping them
the
learn?
The reflective part.
Not this is a picture of me with some counters.
Mm. I'm doing the same thing with when the children finish their little animations. I said, now I want you to think about, when did you really learn about global warming? Which was the most important part? Was it when you drew the pictures? when you talked about it, and that reflection on what really helps me learn.
Yes, yeah, so more emphasis on the learning than what you actually see, the things in the picture.
Yes,
yes. It's getting them to think different.
Well, it's reflective practice, isn't it?
I think we're getting there, so that's great.
It's like anything, it takes time, doesn't it? You've got to build up practice, and so children understand what you want, and then they can begin to think about it while they're actually doing the task.
Yeah. Now, Lois, a topic that's close to your heart, of course, is blogging.
Oh, it is.
And you love your blog, and I haven't really got a blog like yours. I've got my blog that's in my iPod Touch website that I add to, but I don't feel like it's a real blog, sort of like your blog.
We do different things, don't we?
And I look at them and think they're wonderful, but I'm one of these people that I read a lot of blogs and I write comments on different people's blogs, but I wonder, can we all be bloggers?
It's an interesting question, isn't it? And I think you have to be... Well, you are a blogger, technically, because you have got a blog. You're keeping a record of the things that you're doing on your iPod Touch, so that is a blog. My blog is more about... It's a reflective blog on my learning, I think. But it's also a blog that I write for PD for teachers. So when I've discovered a new process that works well for curriculum in ICT, I like to write about that as well. And... It is interesting because I think teachers should be bloggers because it's part of what we do, our craft, and if we're involved in learning, even if it's through the writing of our blog, then it makes us better teachers. So I'd like to think that teachers should be bloggers. But of course you've got to read some as well.
Because I often feel sorry for these bloggers with their wonderful blogs, and then you look at comments and it's got zero.
It doesn't mean people aren't reading them, though. It's just because people haven't commented doesn't mean people haven't visited.
That's right, but it's like their conversation is just one way.
Well, it is, but I came to terms with that a long time ago, that I blog for myself first. You know, I'm writing this because it helps me learn better about what I'm doing. It helps me clarify my thinking. It helps me... It's the constructing of knowledge. It's helping me construct knowledge about the things that I do. So I write it for myself first. If it's useful for someone else second, that's great. So I'm not writing it for other people, not technically.
Okay, because I just have this thing about, can we all talk and who's listening? And if we're all talking and no one's listening, sometimes I think we've not come around full circle. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's our job as writers to be readers as well. You have to be receptive as well as productive. It's part of the full cycle of things, isn't it? And some of the blogging is reactive to what other people have said. It's what someone else has said and what I think about it. So it's a whole cycle of things. And it's been good for me. I must admit I've changed a lot. I didn't ever think of myself as a writer, and I've been blogging now for about a year and a half, and I do enjoy doing it, and when I've finished a piece, I think, oh, that's a good job, and I think I've really learned about that well, and I know that I've got visitors from all around the world come to see it, even if they don't comment. So, you know, that's enough for me, and I'm getting a lot out of it personally.
And you've got a couple of good links there, Lois, about should all learning professionals be blogging?
Yeah, well, it was funny that you asked that question because I came across this article by Stephen Downes, and it addresses exactly this issue that we're talking about, and it talks about teachers and bloggers. And Stephen, we'll put a link to that in our You Connected blog so people can find it. And then I found a second article that he wrote as well about the 7 habits of highly connected people. And one of the first things he said was that they have to be receptive to others and read other people's blogs. So, you know, it's that cycle again, I believe.
One of the things I like about reading people's blogs is that one blog leads you to another blog.
Oh, I know.
And you just have this web, and you've started on one blog, and then you've got a link to another blog and another blog, blogs that you would never come across, really.
And a web is a good way to describe it.
Yeah. And one of the blogs I came across was Mark Walker's blog. And I actually got the link from another blog. So I've sort of jumped from one to the other. And we'll put those links on our Are You Connected blog site as well. People can click and follow those links. The first one was if every student had a computer, which was about one-to-one and different people's comments from around the globe.
Yes.
And Mark actually made a comment on that blog after my comment, and then I followed his link to his blog and found some lots of interesting chat about all different sorts of things. So that'll be interesting for people to look at. Mark was actually on a committee that was involved with the E5 learning that we're doing at the moment, that's meant to be big next year in schools.
I think that's just
so
been a big,
very interesting person.
Mm. Well, so he could be your blog of the week, Jenny.
Yes.
So we could have a blog of the week.
What about you, Lois?
Well,
if
I had to pick a blog of the week, because I've done a bit of... I collect blogs, Jenny. I've got quite a few links to blogs that I like, because I like to have good examples of blogs. My favourite have to be Kevin Jarrett's blog. He has a lovely blog with tons of resources for teachers at all different levels, and he also has a showcase of kids' work at different times. And I love the bit in his header that says that you can't teach without TECK, without tech. And that's copyrighted Kevin Jarrett. So his is my favourite blog in terms of teacher resources, student work. Not much happening at the moment because they're still on holidays, but we can put a link to that and you'll find links to lots of good sites that you could use in your own teaching.
So, Lois, how do you keep a track of all the blogs that you look at? Because I have a bit of a, you know, I've looked at this one for a while, and then I sort of forget about it a bit, and then I'll come across another one, and then somehow I accidentally get forward and backwards to different blogs. You must have a systematic way of recording.
There's two ways. First, I'll tag it in Delicious, and I'll tag it according to a certain criteria. Like, I have my favourite tag is Great School Blogs. And I use those in PDs that I'm doing for bloggers.
Is that Great School Blogs?
Great School Blogs in my username. But the other thing I'll do is if it's a blog I'd like to follow, I'll subscribe to it in my Google Reader. So it comes up in my RSS feed. And when there's a new post or a new blog list, I'll see the title and have a bit of a look. And if I want to read it, I will. And if I don't, I often just don't. But I know what people are writing about in the blogs that I'm interested in following.
Because you can get overwhelmed with everything you follow.
Yep. Well, I've learned not to believe that I have to read all 200 of them, that I can only have to read the ones that look interesting when they come up now. So I feel quite good about that.
Oh, yes. Okay. It's a bit like your email box, isn't it? You soon learn to tick through and delete.
Yes. Well, I do a bit of that. But, you know, and sometimes if I've got a bit of time and I sat there morning, I'll browse through it more slowly. But it just, at least I can see them on the front page when I open my Google. I can see, oh yes, someone's just presented a new blog. Well, that looks like an interesting topic, and sometimes it'll be something that we're doing at the time, so I'll stop and read it.
Oh, that's great, Lois. I'll try and get my iGoogle going a bit better.
RSS is very powerful.
I do have a few different blogs coming into my email with messages saying that there's been a new comment, which is great, and then you can just follow it and see what they've said.
Oh, that sounds good.
Which works well, doesn't it?
It does work well. Now, Jen, I think I'm going to get locked in again if we don't go soon. And I'm a bit worried I may have already been locked in because the lights have just gone off.
And I've got the school council meeting again. Boy, doesn't it come around fast.
I better just go and make sure they haven't locked me in. Hang on a tick. I'll be back.
Well, Lois is gone and she's seeing if she's locked in or not. We'll talk about something else. Whinge of the week. Connecting at conferences. Have you had a problem connecting at conferences? And sometimes the bandwidth just isn't what you hoped it would be. I'm constantly finding when I go to different conferences that the connection isn't always as you'd like. I was actually thinking of buying one of those Telstra USB things you can plug into your notebook and then just have your own internet provision. Because at a conference where you really want to be having internet connection, it can be a bit annoying not to have it. And I need wireless access quite often with the iPods, so they'll offer you an Ethernet cable, but it just won't plug into iPods. So I find connection at conferences, and even when we're at NEC in the States, the connection wasn't always how you would expect it to be over there. It was a bit of an eye-opener. And
I'm back in.
Hopefully this year we'll have a better connection at some of our local conferences here, like VITA. We'll be hoping for good things. You're back, Lois.
I'm back.
Are you locked in?
I'm in trouble.
You're in trouble?
I'm in trouble. I do.
Is the alarm on?
No, but there's three principal past people waiting in the staff room for me to leave.
Well, Lois, I think that winds up this week's podcast.
I think it does. I think we better call it a day. So we will put all our links on our blog, and you can subscribe to this podcast in iTunes.
Yes, and thanks to Daryl and Tony for giving us a mention on their EdTech Crew podcast.
That was fantastic.
It's interesting talking to people from podcast to podcast, isn't it?
Well, it was lovely. And did you hear what the quote that Daryl read at the end of his podcast? And I thought, that's just what we're on about when he said
I can't remember it.
He was talking about connected, and he was quoting David Jakes. And David Jakes had written about digital storytelling. And it says, in 2009 and beyond, being a learner means being connected. And that means understanding how to develop connections face-to-face, as well as through online networks. It is in these connections that form the basis of a personalised learning network that literally can make learning a 24/7 endeavour that involves co-learners and co-teachers from around the globe. And I thought, that's just what our podcast is about.
It is, isn't it, Lois?
Yes. So Daryl not only mentioned us, but he quoted something that's probably the philosophy behind our podcasting.
Yeah, great. Good stuff with Daryl and Tony.
Yeah, I think that was accidental.
Yeah, okay, Lois. Well, thanks for this evening.
Thanks, Jenny.
Good luck with getting out of the building.
Oh, yeah, I better go. I'm going to be in big trouble.
And thanks to everyone for listening to Are You Connected? Episode 4.
And we'll
bye for now.
We'll see you in a fortnight. Bye for now.
Bye. A funny story about that noise from Tweet Deck. You know that noise?
Yeah, the noise? Yeah.
Dale got up in the middle of the night the other night to get a drink or something in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And my laptop made the noise.
Oh, no.
And he did not know what it was. He thought it was some animal in the wall or something. So he went and woke up our niece Callie and said, Callie, there's some animal out in the kitchen. And so they go out there and then it did it again. And Callie laughed and laughed. She said, Dale, it's your mum's computer. It's Tweet Deck.
Oh, that's really funny.